Hello, everyone, and welcome to Top of Mind Florida. I'm Michael Williams.
And I'm Brian Crowley.
And we have a special guest today. Take it away.
Well, here's our special guest.
Well, I could have done that. Patrick Lamb.
Patrick Lamb.
Great to see you.
Noted saxophonist and now call Palm Beach County home, and delighted to make your acquaintance. We both heard you at the Cultural Council event not long ago, and wow.
What a fun event that was, just a celebration, kind of a welcoming to Palm Beach. My wife and I have been here for about 5 years. I mean, she's from here, but I'm from, I lived in Portland, Oregon for 25 years, moved here 5 years ago, and it's taken a while to get to know everybody and sort of, you know, it just takes time to make friends and get to know people. So that's been a lot of fun, and you guys are definitely top of the list.
Well, we're having fun and giving credit where credit's due. Brian's wonderful wife, Cheryl Crowley, who is all things public affairs and cultural council, introduced us to that to come over and hear you. And it was outstanding. And before we get into your story, both what you're doing now and what we like to call your origin story, let's take a listen. It's some of your beautiful work on the saxophone. Let's listen.
So, Patrick, you travel a lot. You do things like go to London for a day and come back on the next day. I mean, a lot of people would think that was nuts to go to Europe for a day and back.
I'd say be careful what you dream of and what you wish for, because that's definitely what I wished for. But now it's an immense amount of work. But, it's a work of passion and something I love. And I play probably 200 events a year, touring around the world, and constantly working on music and putting on events. I'm a producer. I produced a 5-star series actually out in Bend, Oregon, the last 14 years. Yeah. And I've brought 200 artists, Sheila E., Arturo Sandoval, Joey DeFrancesco, you name it. So I'm a producer. It's all involved in music, but it's, trying to describe what I do is it can be a little confusing. They're like, well, what specifically do you do?
All things musical.
Music. Yeah. It's like I have a sound company I produce. I travel the world. I do horn arrangements for Gino Vannelli and Jason Scheff. And, it's just nonstop. So it's a lot of fun.
So when you were a little kid, you didn't get a drum set?
My parents are school teachers, and we are from the deep south. I know you can't
Mississippi.
You can't tell by looking at me that I'm from the Delta. That's not what comes to mind when you first look at me, that I'm from the Mississippi Delta. But I was born in Jackson. I moved 12 times by the time I was 14. So and my parents are not in the military. They're just a little off kilter, maybe, or a little different. Love them. But we lived in, Raymond, Mississippi, Boyle, Mississippi, Cleveland, Mississippi, Austin, Texas, Jacksonville, Florida, all around the South. And then we moved to Portland, Oregon, where my dad got a job teaching science, heading up the science department. He's a physics teacher. And that's where, ironically, I picked up the saxophone.
For the first time?
Yeah.
How old?
14.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'm envious of these kids that get a start at like 7 right. or 6.
Born with it in the crib, yeah.
Just like, I got a late start by all accounts.
You caught up quickly.
Well, I did do my best, yeah. And so, my stepdad taught at a great school called Oregon Episcopal School, and they didn't have a music program. And when we got to Portland, I was enrolled in a public school, mm-hmm. which the positivity of that is that we they had a music program, mm-hmm. So that's how I got introduced to saxophone, and the same beginning band teacher as Chris Bode has, ironically.
Did your band teacher say, here, go play the sax, or was that something you chose on your own?
Well, I enrolled late in school, I remember, like yesterday. And so everybody else had chosen drums and trumpet, which are kind of like the loud instruments, you know, that kids love to play.
Right.
And so the only thing that was left was like clarinet and saxophone. So I chose the saxophone. And it was the first thing that I felt like I could really do well,
right.
You know.
Did you feel an affinity for it right away?
Yeah, right off the bat. So I just went through all of the etude books and all the advanced books quickly. And then, you know, I thought I was getting pretty good. And my dad brought me home a book called the Charlie Parker Omnibook, which is a book of Charlie Parker solos, mm-hmm. transcriptions. And he said, here, learn that, you know. So I started learning that, and then I went out to. I'm giving you the cliff notes of everything. But we went out to some jam sessions, mm-hmm. and through that, people started calling me for tours. My first tour was with Diane Schur after she mm-hmm. won her second Grammy. So
wow.
That was
Robinson,
kind of the start.
You've been with Smokey Robinson. I was reading your list, Diane Schur. Wow.
Bobby Caldwell and Gino Vannelli the last 18 years.
Not bad for a kid who's picked up the saxophone for the first time at age 14.
Yeah, my first saxophone looked like it washed up on the beach, pretty much. So, you know, I'm envious of these kids that get like their $7,000 instrument, you know, right off the bat. That wasn't me. So it took me like 10 years before I got like the instrument that I really loved.
What's the most challenging thing about playing the sax?
It's just kind of an Olympian endeavor. You know, doing anything well just takes 10,000 hours. You have mm-hmm. to take the technique, learn the technique, and then that gives you the freedom to express what you want to express, you know. But, you know, in jazz, there's a lot of improvisation. And so you have to just practice, and then, you know, listen to the greats, you know, Hank Mobley and Sonny Stitt and... you know, Dexter Gordon and all the greats, and then hopefully you listen to that and then you garner a voice mm-hmm. of your own, which is ideally, you know, what your objective is.
And you talk about this a bit that, you know, and your bio, breakout artist on the contemporary jazz and soul scene. I mean, I just loved hearing your music recently. When did you start going from purely artist? You said I have trouble describing what I do because I'm artist now, I'm producer. When did you start branching out and said, I want and need it to be more than that if I'm going to help tell my musical story a bit more and have it be the way I want it to be?
Well, ironically, it started off broader in scope, and then I've narrowed it down as of late. So, because I started off,
we should all be so lucky.
Yeah, it's kind of peculiar because I've had a sound company for many years. I started a ticket company I did over $50 million with, and then I did the Waterfront Blues Festival, did the gates for Steve Miller, this type of thing. But I didn't want to become the ticketing guy. I wanted to play music. So now. It's really been a narrowing of focus, you know, as time progresses, you kind of figure out what you really want to do in life, hopefully, right? And so what I really want to do is play, and that's what I'm focusing on now. Ironically, I've been touring with, you know, all these great people over the last decade, but now it's kind of time for me to focus on my show. You know, it's been hard to not, I mean, it's been a lot of fun and wonderful and a blessing. But it's just time to do, you know, figure out what it is that I do.
What brought you to Palm Beach County? Why the move?
I got married and
good reason.
Met a beautiful Italian East Coast woman.
Okay.
Yeah. And she was from Florida and just she wasn't a big fan of the north, the northwest.
Right.
And it was time for a change. So right. For me. So, and I enjoy the sun and just how beautiful it is down here and, you know, all the new friends I'm making.
That's great. How have the audiences changed over the years?
Well, the whole industry's changed over the years. So, I mean, we used to have record players, right? And we used to have a lot more terrestrial radio, mm-hmm. terrestrial TV. And now, the whole business has changed. I'm sure you guys could relate. So, you know, audiences have so many more choices now. They, you know, some of them stay at home and watch their, you know, their episodes of Dexter or, you know, their YouTube podcasts. You know, drinking may not be quite as popular as it used to be. So people are a little more conscious. So, you know, everything changes. So the audiences are still the same, though. There's, you've got the human heart and you have people who loved. It's really about connection.
Talk about, I don't have a musical note in me. Talk a little bit, I wish I did, but when I do talk to great musicians like you, they say the training, you had the youngster met the moment at age 14, but as you look back, the saxophone is a very soulful instrument. What about your own story kind of helps inform the music? Because I always hear at the end of the day, it still comes from the heart.
Yeah.
What kind of informed that story that you think brings what we hear out? As you look kind of at your story.
Well, I think everybody, all human beings, they have challenges and things that they have to go through that make them learn about what's important, or, you know, maybe some suffering on one hand, and you got to take that test and make it your testimony. So that's sort of, I think, what my music is. I mean, I move, you know, I kind of come from a broken family that has a lot of alcoholism and different aspects that I think a lot of people can relate to that are challenging. So the key is just to take that energy and then it's kind of, you know, channel it into the positive. And so that's really what I'm doing with music.
You also had a tragedy among some of your friends when you were young, at 16, I think, where seven people died.
You've done your research on me.
I apologize.
No, you said it informed your life story and your work.
Yeah, it's
And this was Mount Hood.
Yeah, Mount Hood, 1986. I was part of a climbing team that went up, you know, Mount Hood as part of a training for an outward bound program that's meant to bring your class together.
Sure.
And so we trained, and I was part of the group. I twisted my ankle in indoor soccer the week before, and so I couldn't go. And then seven students and two teachers died. So, yeah, went to a bunch of funerals that week. And, you know, but really what I've learned about that is, and to oversimplify, is that, you know, none of us have a long time here on the planet, you know. So whether it's 16 years or 106, it's really just a blip. So it's made me more excited, more poignant, more decisive, more pushy, you know, some people might say, you know, which is okay. I resemble that. You know, I'm excited about living life and being healthy. I realize that your health is your wealth, right?
Sure,
and so
sure,
I've become
sure.
more focused on that. As of late, I feel like I'm in the best shape I've been in. You know, each year I weed something out, something, carbs, sugar.
Good for you. But your music really, in many ways, as you've described, is testimony to your life story, the good parts and the tragic parts and the tough parts and all of that.
Yeah. And if you feel, you know, if you feel all the things that life brings, then you can channel that.
Comes out in your music.
And
you very consciously feel that, or is it so subliminal
Absolutely.
Now, or you consciously feel it?
It's an experiential thing.
Really?
Yeah. I think once you go through certain things, you are inherently changed forever. And it's hard. You could talk about it, and, you know, to others. You could say, well, real cerebrally, well, it's this or that, you know, read a self-help book. But when you go through some of the things I've been through, or other people go through.
Sure.
Everybody goes through stuff you that changes you and makes you who you are. So, and then if you're a musician and you're connected with, you know, your spirit and your that's going to come out.
Wow. I used to like to say, I'm not the same person I was 5 years ago, and I'm not the same person today. I'm going to be 5 years from now. We're always evolving. You know,
hopefully.
Yeah. Hopefully. Well, good or bad, we're always evolving.
Some friends of mine aren't evolving.
So devolving, I think.
Yeah, devolving.
We
should
it also.
So if there was one person, living or dead, that you could play sax with, that you just would dream of being able to play sax with, who would that be?
Well, I have so many people that I admire.
Mm-hmm.
I think
I only gave you one.
One. That's almost impossible. Because I have to choose from, like, you know, Sonny Stitt and Hank Mobley and Dexter Gordon. And I mean, it's really impossible. But if I just had to put my finger down, I'd probably say, like, Hank Mobley. you know. But there's so many, and each has a great voice, and so that's a hard. That's
all right, go for two and three now. Now that you named your one, who would be some of the
Wilton Felder of the Crusaders, and then maybe Sonny Stitt or Charlie Parker, you know.
These conversations always nowadays about just about anything end up at the same spot, and in the music industry, same place. AI, what it's going to mean to artists, understandably fiercely proud about their work, what it's going to mean if the lines are blurred between what AI can produce versus a Patrick Lamb, although knowing you, that to me would be impossible. But you know the challenges. How are you dealing with the cross currents of AI, what it means to keeping your work to yourself, to making sure that people understand the value of a musician such as you and your friends and colleagues. Talk about the challenges there, because that's all of us are talking about in every walk of life right now.
Well, yeah, I'm talking with a lot of musicians as of late about that very topic. Nobody has a clear answer, because now you can just open up Suno and, you know, I just did it last week where I put in an idea, like, who do you want for your party? Patrick Lamb. And I said, I want it to sound a little bit like Bruno Mars, and it popped out like three different versions. Yeah, so it's changing. It makes you rethink what's important, what's going to be marketable, what's going to be sellable, how you can make any money at all in music. You know, I mean, things have always evolved and changed. I think the only bird in the hand that's left, I think, is just the human connection, the entertainment, like person to person. Because everything else, the imagery, the song creation itself is becoming, I mean, I'm amazed. I don't want to admit it, but the AI is coming up with some pretty amazing songs, you know. And so I'm not sure. I mean, I'm an intense realist. I don't want to give into that, but it's just the reality of the new world.
I've said this to Brian before, and I've said it to friends. Maybe I'm naive. You both can tell me. I still like to hope that, at least for the long foreseeable future, there will be a premium for people like you and in other walks of life who say this is comes from the heart, comes from the soul. It's human produced, played by a human. Is that naive to think that there'll still be a sizable market that allows you to apply your craft and so many others there because people say, I put value on that very thing?
I want to.
You want to believe
that. You want to believe that, and but I think from what I'm seeing, the live entertainment when people are there with you in person, like big concerts, you know, I think that's going to be some of the only differentiation, because people, from what I can tell, cannot tell the difference between some of the new AI stuff and then the human creation. So. I mean, I don't want to say that, but it does seem to be the case. So I don't have an answer to that.
So whether you're jetting off to Europe, to London, wherever, you're leaning into the live part of it for.
That's what I. Yeah, I lean into playing for people, looking them in the eye. I was in Atlanta, this week, and Little Rock, and all these different places, and it's really just about. That's the thing that has not. They have not been able to duplicate or replace us with yet until they come up with some like great handsome robots that sing to you or something. I don't know. We're laughing now.
Well, there goes the podcast.
Well, I mean, I'm not a musician, but I did use Suno once. I put some lyrics in there for some poem I wrote when I was a kid. Put in a little bit of description, and as you know, like 10 seconds later, I had this whole song, and it was really great.
The Isn't music it just unbelievable?
I was stunned. I was absolutely stunned. So it also made me wonder, so am I now a musician?
Right.
Right? I mean, No, I know I'm not. I'll be the first to admit that.
That was definitive.
But I mean, is that going to become a new definition?
You've heard him play.
I don't think I could play your sax.
But I think there's still the direct human connection. Yeah. And I can't imagine that they're going to be able to replace that. I mean, you know, I don't
know. When we listen to you play the sax, I mean, it's phenomenal.
It's a magic, wonderful
experience. You know, I don't need AI to make believe it's something when I can look at you, watch you play, and feel it internally and everything.
Yeah, see, I still want that. I know it myself, I will put a premium on that human experience, whether it's the music I buy or obviously live entertainment until they come out with the robots. But no, I really do think that's the case. Now, 100 years from now, no. But do I think those of you, and we've had plenty of guests who are talking about the role of AI, but almost all I'm saying, I've got to keep that part, not be scared to say, here's the human piece I bring to that. I'm going to aggressively let people know. And now you should worry if Brian learns how to play the saxophone. Then you could have some real.
Yeah, come sit in. Have to bring you up on stage. You know, next time we do the Palm Beach
for people who,
you know, the Palm Beach Arts Cultural Council. We'll have you sit in. You know, so
does any of your work? And you may have mentioned, forgive me, but take you back to your Mississippi Delta roots, because I think of some of the great music has come from there. Before you came on, I know it's stereotypical, but I come back to Elvis in Mississippi. Does any of that part of your experience also play a role? The Southern experience with music and the blues and all of that.
Yeah, it's just something deep down in your soul, I think. And I think I had to move away to Portland and then come back to realize it's just a certain thing, and it's not something you can explain in just a few words. But it has to do with hospitality, and of course, the food and the value set, in general, down in the South is just something I feel. Mm-hmm. You feel in your soul, you know, more. So I love it.
My family's from the South. Not Tennessee, actually. So I hear what you're saying, and I wanted to ask too, for people who want to go find you, where do they do it? And then again, because we'll have people sometimes dip in and out here, and we want to make sure they pick up on what you're doing in the here and now. But first, where do they find you in your work? And then sum up again what you're doing, because your resume is so long and you're doing so much that I want to make sure people know where to find you and what you're up to.
I'm just having fun. You know, I'm touring all over the place. You could just put in Google Patrick Lamb. It'll pop right up. You know, put me on Spotify if you want to hear my music. I have a Spotify channel. So, you know, put it on here in the office and just leave it.
Yeah.
You know, my tour schedule is on patricklamb.com. And like I said, I'm going all over the world, South America, London tomorrow. Actually, and then I'll be back, and then I'm headed to, New York and L.A., and then just, it's kind of nonstop.
Right. So, where do you want Brian to sit in?
The Palm Beach.
The Cultural Council.
Cheryl, his wife, has been so kind.
He didn't invite me to go to New York. Yeah.
It was an oversight.
The Ben Hotel.
I'm sure.
What a wonderful event you guys put together. You know, I must say, I got a chance to really meet a lot of people. Cheryl, your wife, was so kind.
Yes, she's the one that handles all that.
She's got to be the beneficiaries of it.
Yeah. She's a diplomat. Everybody loved Cheryl. So
you've talked about talk about the pain back, because I can tell that's part of your experience, that a piece of you that always finds that energy and paying it back to the younger musicians who are going to have a, you know, interesting climb. We've talked about AI and that. Talk about that piece of it to kind of keep the traditions going for contemporary jazz, as you put it, and how you kind of lean into that with your work and that of some of your colleagues with the younger set who want to come up and follow in your footsteps.
Well, for somebody like me, all I have to do is think about the people who've been there for me early on, and that's really who have been a shining light for me early on. And looking back, I can see how pivotal they changed my life, you know, back when I really didn't know what I was doing or if I had any talent or at all, you know, or if it's possible or what to do or what to practice. There was a couple of people, and it only takes one or two, you know, to kind of take you under their wing and give you a kind of a encouragement. And so that, once you know that, you look back on your life, then if you care and you have a heart, then what you want to do is help others do the same. Yeah. So
pretty cool.
It's pretty simple.
We call it Top of Mind Florida for the very reason that we always like to ask what else is top of mind for you that maybe we missed, or a piece of your story that you have that aha moment says, oh, I wish I'd brought that up to him. And I'm curious too, with that beautiful saxophone, it's like the golfer says, I, you know, or the person who works at the donut factory. I says, I don't eat them when I'm home. I get it all day long. Is this your comfort even when you're at home, to get out the sacks and just sit down, or do you get as far away from it as you can when you're at home?
You'd be surprised. You know, my wife and I are just so simple and quiet. Because I've been at every party. I've played at the White House twice. I've been all over the world. My friend Christopher Radko invited me. Well, this is another story, but he came to Portland, promoting his ornaments and his new, his business with Nordstrom and Saks and so forth. We were on the same TV show, kind of like this a little bit. So, I had my whole band there. We were performing, and he loved the group, so he got my number. And then he came to my CD release party. And then after that, he said, hey, listen, we'll be in touch. I said, great. I didn't really know much about Christopher. And then 2 weeks later, he called. And he said, hey, Patrick, I'm here at the White House with the Social Secretary, and we really enjoy your music. And we would like to invite you to come perform at the White House for the lighting of the Christmas tree.
Wow.
So I was like, well, let me check my schedule and see.
Yeah, I think I can make it.
But Christopher is a dear friend, and he's going to be coming back down Christmas. I'm actually doing a lighting of the Christmas tree in Del Rey.
Wow.
This year.
Cool.
So at the amphitheater.
So we can hear you there.
So, and Christopher, I believe it's not secured yet, but I believe he's going to come down and be part of it, possibly. I just like to have a lot of fun. When I'm not performing, I'm really focused on health and just enjoying life. My wife and I live on the beach, and so I wake up each morning looking at surfers. Lately, my latest hobby is just health. I study, like when I'm on the plane, I'm studying like Dr. Berg's, vitamin recommendations and this type of thing. I mean, it's pretty boring.
Yeah. Yeah. not when you stay in good health.
And I don't drink or smoke, yeah. So I'm a really weird musician, people are like, so I try to show up on time.
Yeah, what? You contrarian. You contrarian. Well, we look forward to hearing your music for a long time to come. You realize you've just amped up tickets, although people get it free, but Del Rey for the Christmas tree lighting.
It's going to be fun, right?
Yeah, and it's a free event. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't, people would still be marching down there to get in. But yeah, it's a great event, and it gets a huge—
You've been there before.
Yeah.
See, I'm brand new.
No,
so,
huge turnout. It gets a huge turnout. You're going to have quite an audience for you there, and families from everywhere. You're going to love it.
It's a Patrick Lamb's Charlie Brown Christmas.
Good, I love it.
So we talk about the spirit of Christmas, and we have sing-along. And we're going to incorporate local schools, choirs that are going to sing along with the Vince Guaraldi music.
All
it's
right.
going to be great.
Well, if you see a Charlie Brown who looks like he has a gray beard and a little baby saxophone and keeps trying to get on stage to sit with you, it could be Brian.
Brian.
So just watch out.
Can you play a little piano?
You've got plenty of time to train.
Exactly.
I'll get on the sax. I want to hear you there. Patrick Lamb, we appreciate you being our guest today on
Thanks
Top of
so
Mind,
much.
Florida. Final thoughts, sir?
Well, I'm going to start practicing the drums so that I can be behind you playing while you're playing the sax. I don't want to, do better than you. I want to make sure you're number one.
Well, we're gonna invite you up and have you part of the band next time we see you.
Oh, I'm going early to make sure I get a front row seat.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys. Yeah.
That's it for Top of Mind Florida. Thanks for being with us.